Jack stood at the curb periodically, nervously and completely unconsciously brushing the cigar tube through his coat with his fingertips. Though the IRQ weighed mere grams, the burden of carrying it was taking its toll. Jack caught himself and had a sudden empathetic connection with Frodo Baggins. Tesla inched up to Jack. He opened the driver's side rear door to get in and was met with Vanity Fair belting out the chorus of their most famous song, "Gotta Get Me Home to My Baby's Side. Ride, ride, ride hitchin' a ride." As Jack slid into the back seat, his eyes met Lisa S. via the rearview mirror. By the look she gave him, Jack could tell she was looking for a sign of recognition. "Cute," he said, with a forced smile. "Purely coincidental. As is you picking me up yet again." "Exactly," Jack responded in a low purr. "No. No? No. What? Satellite radio bub. I have no control over the playlist." "No, Lisa, not a coincidence. The song, maybe. But you, picking me up for fourth time? Twice would have been coincidence, three times is pattern, four times. Who do you work for, Lisa?"
"Me?
I'm just a lowly rideshare driver." Jack sighed and, while glancing out the window, asked, "Sherman. Ask me no questions, tell you no lies.
Roger.
Roger." Jack longed for a last name to accompany the first. The business card. His fingers quickly fumbled through the pocket Roger had stuffed the card into and pulled out a slightly crumbled, white card that read, "Select Services," in gold cursive. Nothing else, save for two phone numbers, one at the bottom left and one the bottom right. Jack recognized they were cell phone numbers. A local DC and Virginia. He sighed and stuffed the card back in the pocket. "When no response came," Lisa asked, "back to the hotel?" Jack nodded and they spent the next few minutes inching through the DC traffic in silence. His fingers once again tickled the cigar tube through his coat. "Change of plans," he announced after only a few blocks.
"Where to?"
"Arlington."
"What's in Arlington?"
"Village Tobacco. Know it?" Lisa pulled the car to the side of the street and entered the information into her phone. 20 minutes, without traffic, so.
"Yeah, just get me there."
They shared the 32-minute ride in silence. All the while, Jack hoped it wouldn't be a cigar salon, lounge as the yuppies called them, or worse yet, a vape shop. Jack's original fear came to fruition as they pulled up to the storefront and were met by a huge plate glass facade. Cafe tables crowded the glass so the foot traffic could look in and see all the self-purported big shots smoking. Jack abhorred these places. The smoking of a fine cigar is an intimate, almost sexual or spiritual experience, reserved for the company of oneself during a reflective moment or the sharing of quiet, deep conversation with close friends. Thankfully, the shop was empty. Jack sauntered in, glancing about. A slight built man of about 30, sporting a razor cut, matted down with what appeared to be hair tonic and wearing a double-breasted camel hair blazer with pine-green turtleneck sweater, greeted Jack with an unctuous smile. As he approached Jack, Jack continued taking in the man's appearance, thinking he was born about 40 years too late, or perhaps this doofus was borrowing a look purloined from a Soho art gallery where some haughty gallerist with an impacted bowl told you what was and wasn't art based on some other asshole's opinion. "And how may I help, sir, today?"
"Monte Cristo's," answered Jack, swearing he could smell Vitali's.
The man placed his palms together, genuflected, and quickly wheeled about. "Classics, whites or platinums?" he asked over his shoulder. "Whites," answered Jack, following right behind with great curiosity, hoping to catch a glimpse of the store's hoard. The shop manager stopped abruptly and turned to face Jack. "If sir will kindly wait here," he said, gesturing to the very spot Jack stood, and bowed again. Although done politely, it was meant and taken as a reprimand, and Jack wondered if the opportunity to secure his long-sought-after Cubans had just vanished. 2 minutes later, OL Shiny Hair appeared and opened a full box of the requested tobacco, presenting the smokes.
"And how many would sir like?"
"Two," said Jack, unsure if lounge etiquette precluded him from taking them from the box himself. After an awkward pause, followed by the manger's maladroit smile, Jack plucked two and slowly inhaled each as the rest were secreted back in their respective location. Upon his return,
The manager motioned for Jack to accompany him to the register. "Anything else, sir?" he asked as he approached the counter. Jack continued to inhale, stalling for time. When he arrived at the register, the manager asked again, "Does sir require anything else?" Jack kept sniffing, not wanting to gob it up. "What is your best cigar?"
"Best, sir?"
"As sir knows, best is a matter of taste." The statement was ladled with a tone of superiority Jack found reminiscent of an experience he'd had at a winery in Napa once. He wanted to smack that sommelier too. Without looking up and with a jerk of his head toward the direction of the hidden humidor, Jack asked, "Any chance you've got number two squirreled away, somewhere back there?" An excruciating silence permeated the air. When Jack looked up, the manager had a nasty smirk perched on his lips.
"No.
No?" Squinting, the manager asked, "Shouldn't you be retired by now?"
"Retired?" asked Jack.
"I thought customs had a mandatory retirement age of 55. "I believe it's 57.
"But I'm not a customs agent."
"Treasury then?"
"OFSC."
"I assure you, aside from the time spent in the military, I am not, nor have I ever been employed by the U.S. government."
"Well, in that case, the answer is still NO."
Jack started to turn to leave.
"What's your name?"
"Artemis."
"Of course it is," thought Jack. "Listen, R-dash.
Artemis." Jack nodded and whispered, "Artemis, Roger sent me, said to use his name."
"Roger?"
"Roger sent.
You?
You're a friend of Roger's." "Yep," said Jack, reassuringly, but silently pleaded, "Please don't ask for a last name." Artemis scrutinized Jack a moment longer.
"Johansson. Roger Johansson sent you here?"
"Oh, Artemis, you beautiful, arrogant, little snot, thank you, thank you, thank you.
None other. OL, RJJ himself."
Artemis frowned a bit, then turned and made his way to the humidor. He returned in slow procession, carrying the yellow, wooden box at waist level, his hands aside the case, like a ring bearing at a wedding. Jack could make out one word on the front, Habana. With each step, Jack's salivary glands went into overdrive. When Artemis stopped in front of Jack, Jack's heart fluttered.
The Holy Grail.
The lid was slowly raised and Jack held his breath. Inside were 25, 6 1/8 inch long, perfect, little brown babies. Jack looked at the inside of the lid, taking in the yellow and red Monte Cristo Cross Swords logo. He wanted to savor the moment.
"How many would sir like?"
"All of them," screamed Jack's lizard brain.
"How much?"
"Normally, and of course when I say normally."
"Yes, yes, of course," agreed Jack, although he had no idea what he was agreeing to.
40. Jack swallowed the water filling his mouth.
40, so for the...
"The whole box dash."
"The box?"
"Yeah, the box, the case."
"That's a grand, right?"
"Correct." Jack whipped out his platinum card.
"Cash only. You understand," murmured Artemis.
"Oh, yes, of course.
But, I don't carry that much cash. Where is the nearest ATM?"
The box lid was slowly closed and Jack's heart dropped.
"Your name, sir?"
"Jack, Jack Kemp."
"Tell you what,
Mr. Kemp Dash."
"Jack, call me Jack."
"All right, Jack. You can have the box, gratis, if you will do one thing for me."
"Name it."
"There's a certain protocol, an unspoken etiquette, if you will, to this type of transaction. An etiquette that, unfortunately, Mr. Johansson has breached."
"Breached?
How?"
"You,
Jack, your presence here.
So, here's the favor.
You will never speak of this again. To anyone, ever."
"Absolutely."
Artemis nodded. "And I assume this box of cigars will last you for quite some time, yes? I won't be seeing you anytime soon, if ever."
"Yes."
"You got it.
Then let me wrap this for you.
We can't have you advertising our wares, can we?" Artemis went about his task, wrapping the box in plain brown paper, then placing it in a fancy paper carrier bag with the store's name on it. He handed it to Jack, who gave a curt nod, then beat feet out of the shop and made for Lisa's car, looking over his shoulder as he did.
"What you got there?" asked Lisa as he slid into the back seat.
"Hmm?
Oh, just a cigars."
"You got a cat what ate the canary grin on your face."
Jack smiled even broader.
I suppose I do. Hotel? Hotel.
When Jack entered the Hilton, he hastened to his room, quite convinced somehow he and his package would be detected and intercepted before he got there. He fumbled for the room key card, glancing up and down the hallway. Once inside, he made sure to set the deadbolt and the swing bar lock, took off his coat, throwing it on the bed, and then quickly removed the cigar box from the bag and its wrapping and placed it on the table next to the bottle of bourbon. He lifted the box lid, gazed with reverence at what lay within, and moistened his lips. Then, retrieved one of the cigars, slowly gliding it under his nose, and was more than half tempted to light up right there in his room, accompanied by a healthy dram of 15-year-old bourbon, a perfect marriage. Looking at his little box of contraband, an uncomfortable notion crept in: what to do with his booty when he left the room. What if the house cleaning staff found them? They'd certainly take them, or worse, turn him in, and he couldn't tote them around as he traipsed all over the city. So, Jack set about looking for a good hiding place. Behind the extra towels in the bathroom seemed like the best place, although he'd have to remember to remove them every time he showered and then put them back. Jack poured himself a drink and turned on his PC. He did a quick search for Roger Johansson, and as presumed, his Roger Johansson did not come up, no matter how he spelled it. A search for select services provided several possibilities: a mortgage company, a food and beverage LLC, a house cleaning service, and a construction company, any of which could serve as a cover. Jack spent the next several hours running down any possible connection. Frustrated, he got up to stretch, get another drink, and noticed the time: 3 p.m. He'd been at it for 5 hours. Was he going down a blind alley? Chasing rabbits? He could just call the number on the card and ask, but that meant switching teams and would put his life in jeopardy, more so than it already was. No, Johansson would have to be a last resort, and Jack cursed himself for wasting an afternoon on him. He needed to clear his head and decided to take a stroll. Even though Jack swore to himself he'd only indulge on special occasions, he grabbed 2 Cubans from the box, making sure to tuck the babies back into their nest. A slow meander brought Jack to the rear of the hotel, just outside the kitchen. A very tall black man about his age was standing outside, smoking a cigarette. As Jack approached, the man switched the cigarette from his left hand to the right and abruptly stuffed the free hand into his pants pocket. Although he never made eye contact, the body language was, "Just keep walking, bud," a signal Jack chose to ignore. The giant wore a threadbare pair of black dress pants, a clean, white t-shirt, an apron that looked like it hadn't been washed in years, and when Jack looked down, was surprised to see a highly polished pair of brown Berluti dress shoes. You could tell a lot about a man by his footwear. The man saw Jack scrutinizing him and gave an uncomfortable shoulder shuffle, so Jack stopped where he stood, about 5 feet away. Jack slowly drew out one of the Cubans from his breast pocket, snipped the end with his pocket guillotine cutter, struck a match, letting the flame caress the tobacco, and puffed as he inhaled. The full embodiment and silkiness of the smoke was better than he remembered. He slowly puffed in silence. A small breeze kicked the smoke toward his mute smoking partner, and a slight head jerk, one of recognition, broke the ice. "That what I think it is?"
"Depends.
What do you think it is?" asked Jack.
"Oh, I think you know what I think it is.
Nothing else on earth smells like that." Jack nodded knowingly.
"It is."
The man flicked his cigarette and gave a longing sideways glance.
"Blow it this way."
Jack took a half step toward the man and complied. Inhaling deeply with his nostrils, the man nodded and asked number twos.
"Damn," exclaimed Jack with a laugh. "Now that's what I call a nose." "That's impressive. So, you know these guys, do ya?"
"Once upon a time."
Jack gauged the man for a moment.
"Marine?"
18 years.
"Gitmo?"
"Guilty."
"How'd you know?"
"Well, you're too young to have smoked them before they got classified.
And they're sure as hell hard to get here, dash."
"Hen's teeth."
Jack nodded. "And those," said Jack, motioning with his head to the man's shoes,
"are Berluti, right?"
This registered a smile and a nod.
"Highly shined," Jack began again.
Shine like that, your posture, and familiarity with Cuban tobacco, well.
The man continued smiling and nodding. He tapped his foot.
You know Berluti?
Got a pair somewhere.
Had these bad boys 30 years.
Had them resold for, no, 5 times.
Fit like a pair of gloves.
Gloves for your feet.
Gloves for your feet, repeated the man under his breath.
Jack stuck out his right hand.
Jack.
George, said the man, shaking Jack's hand. Bet they call you Big George.
Some.
So, what's your story, George?
My story.
Yeah.
George shook his head and took a long drag from his cigarette.
What's to tell?
Oh,
I think rather a lot.
A Marine with 18, not 20 years, working in a hotel kitchen, wearing $800 shoes.
I believe that man has a lot to tell. Prime example of how to fuck up your life, right here.
DD or BCD?
Big chicken dinner, sighed George, slowly nodding.
Sorry.
My own damn fault. Got nobody else to blame.
That's refreshing.
What is?
Ownership.
Personal accountability.
Rare these days.
It is what it is.
Fuck, I hate that saying. I used to tell the men under me only inarticulate idiots say that.
What rank were you?
In the end, private, but before I sent it all to hell, Master Sergeant.
What did you do, if I may ask?
George eyeballed Jack hard, then blurted out, what the fuck, I'll never see you again.
Well, you know the adage, never come home early in the afternoon and surprise your wife.
Oh shit.
Yeah,
with my best friend, sighed George, putting his smoke out on the bottom of a shoe, twisting the filter off and pocketing it.
Rough.
Caught him in mid-thrust.
In flagrante delicato.
In the kitchen, on the counter, fucking bread, bologna and mustard still setting there. Can't eat that shit to this day.
Started beating the shit out of him. My wife hit me on the back of my head with a vase, I think.
Turned around and popped her, just a hood reflex, really. Sent her tumbling into the counter. She struck the corner with her head dash.
Kill her. No, but messed her up bad. She was in a coma for 11 days. Broke his nose and jaw, couple of ribs. I spent 2 weeks in the brig before they brought me up on charges.
Guess they were waiting to see if she died.
Shit.
Yeah.
Wives and friends, huh?
I'm done with both.
Never got married again?
Nope.
And no friends, none?
Pet a dog and it bits you, you don't pet it again.
What did you get charged with?
Everything and the kitchen sink.
Was looking at serious time.
Leavenworth time.
Wound up getting 6 months in the brig and the BCD. Probably got off light.
Neither spoke for several minutes.
It's understandable, though, said Jack, sympathetically.
Is it?
Sure. The betrayal on two fronts. I could have just walked out, wrote him off, and filed the papers on her.
You were wounded.
It's all narcissism.
What is?
All of it.
Everything, said George, motioning to his surroundings with his hands.
Every dictator, serial killer, abusive spouse, pedophile, rapist, politician, corrupt, or otherwise.
Me.
More about or for me.
Fuck everyone else.
And you are standing in the Axis Mundi of it all.
So, no good politicians left then?
You tell me.
Who would want to live in an environment where every word you speak or misspeak, every step or misstep, every breath, every relationship is scrutinized under a microscope and played out repeatedly on one of the so-called news outlets?
What type of human being wants that?
And they love it.
They can't wait to get in front of the cameras and perform.
Lie, deny, and spin.
You mentioned personal accountability before.
There isn't any because they all lack one crucial element.
Integrity.
Shame.
They can't be shamed.
Once upon a time, they at least pretended to be decent humans. They did all their nasty shit under the cover of darkness.
Hell, Nixon wouldn't even be impeached or probably even charged today.
Really?
You think it's gotten that bad?
George shrugged and sighed.
What the hell do I know?
As their conversation waned, Jack slowly puffed on his cigar as George stuffed his hands into his pants pockets and stared off into the distance.
George, Jack began again. What did you mean when you said, what the fuck, I'll never see you again?
Hmm.
When I asked your story.
Oh, well, sometimes strangers will share intimate details. There's a safety in knowing they'll never see each other again. I mean, what I just shared with you, how's that ever going to come back on me? Plus, I'm one of the invisible people.
Invisible people?
Yeah, service staff.
Jack questioned the moniker again, invisible people.
You in the habit of conversing with the kitchen help? We're here, but no one ever sees us.
You wouldn't believe what I hear riding in the elevator, bussing tables, or just walking around.
Like what?
All kinds of shit.
Gossip mostly, but this is DC. Lots of info and gossip.
Invisible people, muttered Jack thinking.
Do a lot of senators stay here?
Everyone stays here, from time to time.
Moses? George turned and made eye contact with Jack for the very first time.
Moses?
Moses, nodded Jack.
Yeah, him too.
He ever, say.
Anything of interest around you?
George hissed through his teeth.
Just when I was starting to like you.
What?
Who you with?
Post?
Times.
I'm not a reporter.
What?
George, sighed Jack, I wish I knew.
And what does that mean?
I'm a puzzle solver, if you will, and I think I may have taken on a job where I've bitten off more than I can chew.
What's at stake?
If I complete the task, a cool mill.
George whistled, nice.
And if you fail?
I don't think I'll be walking around very long.
High stakes.
Indeed.
Who's holding the bag?
I was approached by a fellow by the name of Adams, Sherman Adams, know him?
Nope, said George, shaking his head.
Well, he and his investors need some information, retrieved.
George nodded.
Computer shit.
Moses computer shit.
Exactly.
I'm thinking you're right.
About what?
Failing.
Yeah, I've got a feeling.
What makes you think it won't happen if you do succeed? Asked George.
Jack's heart sank.
It never occurred to him that he'd be double-crossed and taken out.
Scary thought.
So, anything you can tell me that might help?
It's the girls you need to speak with.
The maid staff.
Nah, the girls.
Working girls.
Prostitutes.
Not the walkers, high-end escorts.
Really?
Hell yeah.
Once the booze starts flowing, the coke and pills come out and their pants come down. They can't wait to spill.
Got to make sure the ladies know how important they are.
And who should I be talking to?
George scrutinized Jack for a moment.
Ain't gonna be cheap.
Jack reached into his pants pocket and George held up his palm in a stop fashion.
Not me.
Don't want any part of the contamination. You want to talk to Annette?
Annette?
Yeah. You want a classy high-end lady for the night. You talk to Annette.
How do I find Annette?
Come on.
Really, it's not my thing. Never has been.
Tell Carlos you want to see Annette.
Carlos.
Concierge?
Front desk?
George hissed with disbelief. Jack reached into his breast pocket and tried handing George the other Cuban. George looked as if Jack was trying to hand him a snake.
What? Asked Jack.
This is DC.
Jack.
Someone tries to give you something for free, you run. That's how they get you, seduce you, then they own you, swallow you whole.
It's not free.
Payment for some very useful information.
George shook his head. Nah.
Well, a gift between friends then.
What did I tell you about friends, Jack?